Radim Kocman.
Take it easy, huh? Take your time. You may want to talk to Zbigniew.
Good. I need it. It's gone again.
There we go. Full screen. Oh.
Yeah. Okay. Hello, my name is Radim Kocman, and I will introduce you scatter context generators of sentences with their parses. At the start, I will remind you some knowledge you should know from previous lesson in this class. Then I tell you what this generator is all about and how it was invented. Then, as the main part of my talk, I will show you how you can generate your own generator or create. And in the end, if we have a time, I will show you some specific cases of these generators. So this topic is based on scatter context grammars. You should know that, but for reminder, it's a quad tuple that we have a set of symbols, set of terminals, which is a set of symbols, and some starting non-terminal and rules in the following form. We have 1 to n non-terminals on the left side, and we rewrite every of these non-terminals with some string of symbols. If we have a general scatter context grammar, we can have empty rules, so we can generate epsilon strings. If we have propagating scatter context grammars, we cannot do that, so our strings on the right side of the rule always need to have at least one symbol. If you look at the generative power of these grammars, then we know that the general scatter context grammar have the same power as recursively enumerable languages. But when we forbid to use epsilon rules, the power decreased dramatically. Now the power of propagating scatter context grammars is somewhere between context-free and context-sensitive languages. We don't know how exactly this is powerful, but we know for sure it's more powerful than context-free languages, and it can be same powerful as context-sensitive, or it may be less powerful. We don't know for sure. And now, we like the way how propagating scatter grammars works, but we don't like the power, decreased power. So there is a question if he can somehow simulate general scatter context grammars with propagating scatter context grammars. You may be surprised by the answer, but it is yes, we can do it. And here is some basic idea how it's done. We add a new terminal into our grammar, and instead, in every rule we have an epsilon, we generate that new terminal instead of it, and in some part of our derivation we move all these symbols to one side of the string, left side or the right side, it doesn't matter. And so the generating language look like this. It has that symbol on the start or on the end of iteration of this symbol. So we can have many dollars before the string, and then we have an X. And this X is the exactly same as the language we are simulating. So this representation has one problem. And this is exactly this symbol, because it is meaningless. It is here because we cannot generate it without it, because propagating scatter context grammars are less powerful than general scatter context grammars. But it may be some room to generate something useful here. So for this, it was studied further, and Alexander Meduna with Jiří Techet invented the way how we can generate something useful. And this is called the scatter context generators. Basic idea is that instead of that new symbol, we add useful information called bars. If you remember, what is the bars? If you remember labels in regulated grammars, how we talk about it, then we add a label for each rule in a grammar. And when we make derivation step here, we denote it by that label. So when we generate a whole some string of terminals from a starting non-terminal, we do it by using of a string of labels, and this string of labels is called the pars. It is the order in which we use the rule from the grammar. Now, if we look at the definition, then scatter context generators are propagating scatter context grammars with the following. It generate X, where X have two parts. One is Y and second is P. The first part contains only terminals without labels, and the second parts are labels. And we generate this string from starting non-terminal by precisely the parts of P. So there it will be at the end we have a generated string and the parts how we done it. And we have a proved theorem that for every recursively language there exists such a generator that it generates language, they generate the same language with the parse. So when we delete the labels from the resulting strings, it is exactly the same as the enumerable language we are trying to simulate. In the main part of this presentation, I will show you how you can convert any scatter context grammars into scatter context generator. Here is some example we will be using. It is very basic language N2N, B2N, C2N, where N is greater or equal to 0. I choose this language because it has only 3 terminals and 3 rules, so it will be very easy to follow, and we have epsilon rules here also. And to show you how it works, I will be using 2 derivations. In one we are trying to generate string epsilon, and in the second we are trying to generate string ABC. For the first we use rule 1 and 3, and for the second rules 1, 2 and 3 in this order. Now we'll be using a basic conversion method. This method generates only general version of generator, so it doesn't use some specific properties, but it is the easiest way how we can generate such generator, and it is the easiest example I found that you can follow. On the input of our method, we have any scatter context grammar. It can be non-propagating, and we generate our generator. If we look here, we have a new starting non-terminal we will be using, and in terms of terminal, we have all the terminals from our input grammar, and we also have labels from this new grammar we are creating. It is because in a generator we need labels in the result string, so it must be terminals, because without it we cannot end the derivation. Now, if we look at an set of all strings, we have the same symbols as in the previous input and labels. We add 7 new non-terminals to internal purposes, but we assume that these terminals are not in the input grammar, And also for every terminal in input grammar, we add its overlined version, because in the process we need to somehow manipulate with those terminals before they are in the right place. Now, in terms of rules we will be creating, for this presentation I divided these rules into 6 categories. This is because every of these categories do something else, and in the terms of simulation they are used in exactly this order. So we every time use start rules, then simulation rules, stop rules, shift rules, erase rules, and we end with the end rule. Now let's start with the start rules. We have always the 2 start rules, and the reason why we have them is because we need to change starting non-terminal to some form we will be using for simulation. The second rule is used for empty strings, because X and Z in our first rule is used for shifting terminals. When we generate epsilon strings, we don't have any terminals, so we are not shifting nothing, then we don't need them. And there is a $1, which represents of state of our simulation, and in every rule we'll be creating there is always the label, which is the same as the label of the rule, because we need somehow remember what we are doing in this generator. And then there is a S, which represents the starting non-terminal of input grammar. So in our example derivations, in first we use rule 1 epsilon, and in the second we use rule 1. And now we can go to main simulation. Here we take every rule from input grammar and we convert it in some way. So that we add a new non-terminal at the beginning, and with every application of the rule we again add the label of that rule in the resulting string. In other part is the same as the rule in input grammar, but we change 2 things. Every time we have a terminal in input grammar, so here in the second rule, when we have AABBCC, we change these 3 terminals into overlined non-terminals here, overlined A, overlined B, and overlined C, and we change epsilon rules for Y, because we are forbidden to use epsilon rules in propagating scatter context grammar. And we simulate the derivation from input grammar. In our first example, we rewrite S to ABC, and then we rewrite ABC to Y, Y, and Y. In a second example, we rewrite S to ABC, then this, and again we change non-terminals ABC to Ys. And now we need to say that the simulation is completed. We are not longer simulate anything from input grammar, so we use end rules. Those stop rules just change the state of our simulation. In the first rule, we change $1 to $2, and in the second, which is again used for empty resulting strings, we change $1 to $3. It is because in the $2 part we are trying to move terminals to the left side. We don't do this in the epsilon string, so we will skip this part. Here I just compressed the labels, because every time in derivation when we use a label, it adds a new label to the resulting string, so it will become very confusing for a moment. It will be a long string of labels, so I'll just always hide it in this 3 dots. So in our first example derivation, we change $1 to $3, because we are skipping the moving part, and in the second example we will change it to $2. Next part I will introduce is shifting rules, and here we will be working with only the second derivation. Now, for every terminal in our input grammar, we create two rules. These rules are almost exactly the same, but the rule 2 something is used when we move non-ending terminal, and 3a is used when we are moving the last terminal, because how you can see here, we change the state to $3. If you look at our example generator, it will generate 6 rules, but we will not use all of them, and I will show you this one example because it is much easier to follow what is happening. In our second derivation, we are trying to generate ABC. We use as the first rule 2A here, and what it does, it moves overlined non-terminal A to the left side and change it to terminal. So we have A here, and we move Z from here to the right, where there was that non-terminal before. In the second step, we do the same thing with B, with rule 2B. So we shift B from here to the left, and we move Z to the right. In last step, we use rule 3C. And it is because it is the last terminal here, we go into shifting, and so we move C again to the left, but now we override the X, so we don't have an X anymore, we change the right side to all Ys, and $2 to $3. So now is the exactly the same form here as we have for our first example in here before the stop rule. So we are now in the same spot, and next rules will be used against for both those examples. Next rule is erase rule. There is only one rule, and we are going to achieve now that we have completed our simulation, but we have some non-terminals in a string, and before it is the end or ending result, we need to get rid of those non-terminals, and because we cannot erase them, we will use this. Every time we take $3 and y and change $3 to its label and y to $3. So basically we are moving dollar to the right side, and we need to do this rule how many times we have y in our string. So in the first example we use this 3 times, and in the second example we use this 7 times to get rid of all y's in a string. And we end this simulation with the end rule, which do that thing that it change our last non-terminal, which is dollar, to label of this rule, so which is 4. So we change $3 to 4, and here again $3 to 4. Now I'll show you the result of our derivations. So for the first example, our resulting string is this. You can see that there are no classic terminals. It is because we practically generate empty string, but we have labels which describe how we did it. So if we again split it into categories, we start with the rule 1.8, then we use simulation with these two rules, then we use stop rule, skip shift rules, 3 times erase the y, and end the simulation. If you look at our second example, we have some classic input, which is ABC. This is exactly what we was trying to do. And we have labels, which are, we have a lot more labels, but again, we can split it, and we have one start rule, 3 simulation rules, which are the same as we used in the input grammar, so we use rule 1, which is represented by 1-1, rule 2, which is represented by 1-2, and rule 3, which is represented by rule 1-3. We stop the simulation of input grammar, we shift ABC to the left, we 7 times erase Y, and we end with rule 4. That's all for this example. So this way you can generate a generator from any scatter context grammar. And there is one problem we have. I don't know how many time is left.
Not much.
Okay, so I just say it very briefly. There is a problem that in the general version that we are in the simulation part we cannot precisely deterministically reconstruct our derivation because we don't know which terminals we rewrite. In our example it wasn't a problem because we always have the non-terminals S or ABC, so we couldn't choose anything else. But if we had other grammar it cannot be clear. So for this we have a canonical version of generators which generate sentences only in the leftmost or rightmost way. And the last thing I want to say is we also have some reduced version of generators and we can try to get a minimal number of non-terminals. In this case we can have a maximum of 6 non-terminals and the context dependency of this grammar would be 3. It means it would have maximum of four non-terminals on the left side of every rule. Because first non-terminal is always non-context sensitive and other trees are making it more sensitive to the context. And if we are trying to achieve the minimal context dependency, we can change it to 1, so every rule has maximum of 2 non-terminals on the left side, but we increase the number of non-terminals we will be using in these grammars, and it is up to 9. So it is all for my presentation. And if you are interested more about this topic, I recommend the book Scatter Context Grammars and Their Application from Alexander Meduna and Jiří Techet. You can find it in our library. That's all.
If you should look, I know a lot.
Yeah.
We are working together. So it is clear to me, but if you should summarize the main advantage of this stuff, what would you say? How would you sum up the great advantage?
The great advantage is that we can generate any recursively enumerable language
right. With
grammar which is originally not that powerful.
And plus
we have some additional information which is the parse, how we get the string.
Sentences with there. You should have T-H-E-R.
Yeah, sure.
But it's a misprint, I know.
I will repair it. Okay.
Some improvements for this?
Not yet.
Are you planning to, or just...
We have now different topics, so maybe in the future, I don't know.
Not so different. I'll explain. Rajiv has a new idea and we are going to work on that.
Motivation. This cottage.
So, any other questions?
What is your target or what is your aim?
My aim with what? With this or with... I don't know what you are asking.
What's the example? Where is it used?
Where this is used?
Yes.
I don't know if it has some real applications now. You maybe can say.
Part
Vladimir, Parsis are used in Parsi. Okay, the top-down, bottom-up Parsi. Here we've got top-down Parsi. And when you've got Pars, then you can use it to generate another code, let's say, in compilers. Okay? So Parsis are used and applied in Parsi. Vladimir, do you agree?
Yes.
Okay.
Have you some information if anybody really used this in some...
I don't have this piece of it.
Okay.
But in principle, I'm sure we can. In the book, look, before you quit, in the book from 2010, there is a chapter about applications. And so you can... you can read the book and you'll find several applications, mostly in natural languages. Vladimir, you might be interested, because you are working with Pavel Smirch, right?
Yes.
And you might be interested in reading this book, because there are some applications specifically in terms of natural language processing. Okay.